But it didn't work. She kept talking. I watched you in the hallway as you listened to the song. I know it made you miss your dad. I miss him too. More and more every single day. But you know, he's not really gone. He's here right now, watching over you. His arms are around you. As usual, my mother was right. I did miss Dad. I missed him a lot. Maybe I had been too young to realize what I had when he was alive, or maybe he just worked too much, but now in hindsight, what I had lost was perfectly clear, and it really hurt. But honey, my mother continued, you're missing what the song is really about. You're missing the most important part, the whole reason Dad loved to sing it so much. She began to quietly hum the words. When life's perils thick and found you, put his arms unfailing round you. She paused for a few minutes. His arms are always around you, Eddie. And they're always around Dad, too. Whenever he had a tough day at work, I would sing those words to him, and all was well. By that point, my attempts to remain emotionless failed. A tear escaped my left eye and rolled down my cheek. I hoped my mother wouldn't see it. That was unlikely. Besides, if God wasn't here with both of us right now, then why would we have this beautiful night sky? Look at the clouds, Eddie. They're full of snow. And when God squeezes them from heaven tonight, we are going to have the kind of white Christmas your father always loved. She smiled at me with extra love in her doe brown eyes and added, so good night. Try to sleep. And don't you dare get up before daylight, she winked. Christmas morning doesn't start until Christmas morning. She turned out the light as she left the room, and my nightlight lit up brightly, reminding me I wasn't quite a man just yet. I stared out the window, determined not to fall asleep until I saw the first snowflake. The lines that my mother had gently hummed were stuck in my head. When life's perils thick confound you, put his arms unfailing round you. She was probably right, but I still felt alone with my burdens. I was a 12-year-old kid, with no father and no money. As I continued gazing out the window, waiting for the storm to begin, I had no idea that soon I would need his arms more than I ever thought possible. The storm of my life was already forming. Chapter 4. The smell of Mom's pancakes were so wonderfully strong that it actually woke me up. I jumped out of bed and rushed to the window. There's something magical about falling asleep with the ground bare and dry and waking up to it covered in a fluffy white blanket of snow. But the magic would have to wait for some other day because the front yard was still covered with the same coarse gray snow that had fallen days earlier. I looked up towards the sky. The stubborn clouds still looked like they harbored snow, but so far they'd been unwilling to part with it. The worst part was, I knew Mom wouldn't sympathize with my disappointment. She was always one of those people who thought that snow was more of a hassle than anything else. She liked the idea of snow, but she hated almost everything else about it. Shoveling it was a pain, the car's windshield took forever to defrost, and driving in it, even in the smallest amount of snow, was virtually out of the question. I used to tell her that she was a snow grinch, until I became old enough to shovel, and then I finally understood what she meant. But if Mom was a grinch, then Dad was the mayor of Whoville. No amount of snow was ever enough. We would stay up late together, waiting for that promised snowstorm to start, drinking hot chocolate and listening to the radio to see if they'd cancel school early. On days like that Christmas morning, when the weatherman had obviously been so wrong, I would get frustrated and ask Dad how, with all this technology, they couldn't even figure out if it would snow or not. It was a rhetorical question, but one time he gave me an answer that I'll never forget. He said, Eddie, if I baked bread as well as these morons predict the weather, our bakery would be bankrupt and we'd never have a loaf of bread in the house. I tried really hard not to laugh. It took Dad a moment before he realized what he had just said. He paused for a second, saw the smile on my face, and then said, "Well, I mean, if that were the case, then we still wouldn't have any bread. But you also wouldn't have any nice boots to wear." It's one of the only times I ever laughed at my bakery boots. On the rare occasions when the weatherman actually got it right, Dad would wake me up early in the morning, right after he'd come back from frying donuts at the bakery. All he would say to me was, "Eddie, look out the window." I would jump out of bed and lean against the windowsill. Dad would put his hand on the top of my head, and the two of us would just stand there in silence, watching the snow fall. There was one storm I'll never forget. It began early in the afternoon, and by evening it was snowing so hard that school had already been canceled for the next day. Mom, the Grinch, couldn't believe it. "How can they cancel school so early? The snow could stop at any second, and then they'll look foolish." Dad and I tried our best to ignore her. We were like a mini snow support group, and we didn't want her to spoil our party. After dark, we suited up and decided to take a completely unnecessary trip to the B&H corner store. It was about 3 blocks away. We went out the side door into the garage where Dad's big maroon 1972 Impala station wagon, you know, with a really nice fake wood paneling, sat waiting. Dad had bought the car almost new in 1974 and had been so proud when he had first brought it home. Our Impala was the perfect car for a kid because it was so modern and full of modern technology. The tailgate, it didn't swing out like everybody else's station wagon because this one was curved and electric. With just a push of the button, the window magically disappeared into the roof, and the tailgate slid into the floor. It even had a third row of seats that faced backwards. In retrospect, the tank-like Impala probably hadn't been the best car to buy at the height of the oil crisis. But then again, maybe that's why we could afford it. "We're not taking the car," Dad exclaimed as he saw me walking toward it. Then he bent down, grabbed the metal garage door handle, and pulled it up. "We're gonna walk." As the door creaked open, it was almost like we were staring out at a dream world. The snow was still falling, but it was so light, so fluffy, that it hit the ground with just a whisper. The air was crisp and fresh, with just the slightest hint of smoke from the wood fires keeping our neighbors warm. The streetlights gave everything a surreal, peaceful glow. The snow seemed to be falling much harder in the glow of the bulbs than anywhere else, but I knew it was just an illusion. Dad took my hand, and we walked down our short driveway towards the street. I instinctively tried to make the turn where the sidewalk would be, but Dad pulled me straight ahead into the street. I didn't say a word. We walked down the middle of the road, hand in hand, without ever seeing a single car. Each time we'd pass under a streetlight, I'd look up and see the yellowish glow light up the thin layer of snow on Dad's heavy wool jacket. We both looked at each other and smiled. There was no Grinch around to spoil our fun. It was all so perfect. Actually, it was all too perfect. I should have known it wouldn't last. I felt so let down by the lack of snow that Christmas morning that I hadn't even noticed how cold the floor was. I put on my slippers, the present from Santa last year, and headed down the stairs. For the first time ever, I was not going to be dragging Mom out of bed on Christmas morning. My grogginess gave way to anticipation, and my heart began to race. Visions of my new bike consumed me. I knew that since I had made a promise to God to earn it, this would be the year that I would finally get exactly what I deserved. I'd waited patiently for so long, watching as every one of my friends had gotten the bike that they had asked for. Now it was my turn. Mom was right. His arms were around me, and after all I'd been through, they were about to deliver the one present that could make me happy again. Christmas music was playing on the big Magnavox console stereo in the living room. It was so cool. It could hold 8 different albums. When one was over, the tone arm would come up, and the next album would fall into the turntable. That morning, all of the albums were from the Firestone Christmas series. I think we got them one year when we bought our tires. As I rounded the corner of the living room, I heard Julie Andrews and my mom singing together. "They know that Santa's on his way. He's loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh." "Merry Christmas, Eddie!" I'd been spotted. Mom danced around the corner from the kitchen. She wiped her hands on her apron and held them out as an invitation to a big Christmas hug. "Merry Christmas, Mom," I said as I gave her a 12-year-old half a hug. I didn't want to get pancake flour all over my pajamas, and I knew if I let her give me a full hug, it would be like 5 minutes before I wriggled out of it. I broke free as quickly as I could and headed towards a tree in the corner. It glowed with a single strand of lights that were far too big for the small evergreen. Popcorn strings and foil icicles connected ornaments of glass, wood, and paper. Very few of the ornaments were store-bought. Many were the result of school projects or family activities, but most had been made by Mom over the years. I moved my practice gaze around the green felt skirt at the base of the tree where Mom had stitched the nativity scene. There were only a couple of gifts that hadn't been there on Christmas Eve, and only one that I didn't immediately recognize from Operation Sneak Preview. None of them were even close to being large enough to be a bike, but I still had high hopes. I knew that Mom had enough of Grandpa in her blood to put me through some kind of cat-and-mouse games that he did. A few years ago, she had waited until all of my presents had been opened before pointing through the back window to my last present, a brand-new sled with a big, huge bow on top. With that Christmas still fresh in my head, I began to think how Mom might have hidden the bike. There were a lot of possibilities. My guess was that she'd probably wrapped up a picture of the Huffy and then stashed the actual bike in the garage. It would fit her perfectly. She could keep me guessing while not wasting any wrapping paper, something that Mom always seemed to be preoccupied with. I picked up a present so I could better see what was behind it, hoping to find the one that I hadn't seen yet so I could shake it. "Is that for me?" Mom sang. She was too quick for me. "Oh, yeah, Merry Christmas." I turned hesitantly from the gifts and handed her the present I had paid for by picking berries at my grandfather's farm over the summer. She carefully opened the clumsily wrapped package. "Gloves!" she exclaimed with a little too much enthusiasm for me to believe her. Then she got a thoughtful look on her face and looked at me and said quietly, "I did need new gloves. They're perfect, honey. Thank you." I wasn't listening. I was too busy fishing for her other gift. I found it and handed it over. "Here's my other present for you." "Oh my, another one?" she said as she took the small rectangular box. Inside were a handwritten card and a bar of chocolate. "Merry Christmas, Mother," she read aloud. "You are as sweet as this chocolate." She laughed. "Eddie, did you buy this yourself?" "Yes," I replied proudly. "I was thinking you could eat it or make cookies with it." "Eddie, do you know what baker's chocolate is?"
"Yeah, it's chocolate you can bake, isn't it?" I replied.
Mom smiled at the thought of how much I loved cookies, yet obviously hadn't listened to a word my father had said about making them.
"Yes, dear, it is, but it isn't very..."
She stopped and then smiled as if it had been absolutely the best Christmas gift she had ever received.
You are the sweetest boy, I mean young man, who has ever lived."
Then she opened the package and ate a square with her eyes squinting just a bit and a grin on her face.
Best chocolate I think I've ever had."
She came to me and took me in her arms. Oh, it seemed like an eternity. "My turn?" I asked anxiously.
"Your turn, sweetheart."
I first opened the presents that I had, well, you know, already opened. I did my best to act surprised as I held each of them up to show Mom.
Homemade mittens from my cousin,
a baseball from my uncle that I hadn't seen in years, and a bag of candy that I was pretty sure was the exact same striped stuff that I didn't eat the year before. I wondered if Mom hadn't been putting out the same bag of candy every year since I was 4. Finally, only one present left. It was a fairly large box, but very light. Oh, please, God, I thought to myself. Let it be a Polaroid picture or even a handwritten note or card. I couldn't believe I was actually hoping to not open a BB gun or a set of walkie-talkies, but the Huffy was the only present on my mind. It was the only present that would make me happy. Mom had decorated the box with a large bow and a ribbon that looked suspiciously like the one I had taken off my birthday gift. I tore through the reindeer and snowflakes wrapping paper until I was left with a simple, plain brown box. My heart raced as I slowly lifted the top and pushed aside the crinkled white tissue paper. It was a sweater.
Do you like it?
Mom asked as I stared at the gift, unable to speak. She shifted on the couch and crossed her arms as she waited several seconds for an answer. Holding on to my last possible fragment of hope, I unfolded the sweater, hoping that there would be something tucked inside that would point me towards the bike. I shook it back and forth as hard as I could without being obvious, but nothing happened. That's when I realized there wouldn't be a bike that year, just a stupid, handmade, ugly sweater.
Do you like it? Do you really like it?
Mom was hoping my silence was due to some unspeakable joy. A stupid, handmade, ugly sweater that wasn't a bike.
Sure, Mom. It's great.
I felt like I should cry. I was entitled to cry, I thought. But it was the kind of sad that didn't include tears. If I hadn't worked so hard all year, if I hadn't thought about that new bike every waking second of my life, if I hadn't promised God that I would earn it, then I might not have noticed how the color of yarn would perfectly match the Wonder Bread polka dots on my bread bag boots. But I had done all of those things, and I did notice.
I'm really sorry about the bike, honey.
Mom's voice was too soft and tender for how I felt. It's just that the repairs for the roof were so much more than I expected. I know you understand. Maybe I can save up enough to get it for you next year. Oh, I understood all right. I understood that we would always be the poor family, and I would always be the poor kid with plastic boots and no bike. I stared down at the sweater, and I felt my body temperature rise, almost as if I had already put it on. I didn't know who had let me down. Mom, for not buying me what I deserved. Dad, for not watching over me like he was supposed to. Or God, for ignoring my promise. I was so disappointed with all of them that I forgot that I was supposed to, you know, put the neck under my chin as if I were trying the sweater on.
Oh, I hope it fits, Mom said, trying to remind me to do the chin thing.
I didn't get the hint. Oh, I'm sure it will, I replied without enthusiasm. Mom finally came over and took the sweater from me and held it up to my back. She pressed her fingers into my shoulders as she matched the edges to the outline of my body.
Oh, sure, she said. At the rate you're growing, it'll be just the right size by next fall.
She was way too excited about the whole thing. I could only muster a half-hearted reply back.
Thanks, Mom. It's great.
It's just like the expensive one we sell at Sears, you know, she offered proudly, attempting to combat the obvious disappointment that had involuntarily spread across my face. We ask almost $40 for a real hand-knit wool sweater. I couldn't afford that, of course, but I was able to come up with enough to buy the good yarn. She stopped talking and looked at me as if embarrassed to be explaining her gift.
Really, it's great, Mom. Really, I did need a sweater.
I couldn't get past my own disappointment or look beyond myself to see what the gift meant to her. I thought back to the note that Mom had left for me under her bed. She was right. I had missed my gift. Mom had been making it right in front of me every night while forcing me to watch Little House on the Prairie. She thought Pa Ingalls was cute, and I had to suffer for it. But now it all made sense. A stupid, handmade gift made while watching a stupid show. I bet all my friends who got to watch the shows they wanted, like Starsky and Hutch, also got presents they actually asked for. My disappointment over the morning snow now seemed trivial compared to how upset I was about my present. You're an idiot, I thought to myself. You should have known. You should have seen this coming. Mom looked at me with eyes that were, for once, surprisingly hard to read. Was she relieved that I seemed to be so happy? Or did she see right through my act? Quite honestly, at that moment, I didn't really care. But I knew I couldn't keep up the charade forever. I had to escape.
I'm just going to run up to my bedroom and put it away. I'll be back in a few minutes.
I felt a familiar, relentless burn returning to my eyes. I ran upstairs before Mom could see my tears. Chapter 5. My bedroom window looked out over the street in front of our house. Before my prepubescent growth spurt, I could stand at the sill, put my elbows on it, and rest my chin on my hands. That Christmas morning, I was just a little too tall to do that anymore. So I stood back a few inches, put my hands on the sill, and leaned forward until my forehead rested against the cold glass. It burned my skin, but I kind of felt like I deserved the pain. The snow had finally started. They were big, beautiful flakes, and the thin white coating on the street meant that it had already been falling for quite a while now. I guess I had been too busy feeling sorry for myself to even notice. I was just about to turn away when I saw a little girl across the street riding a brand new bike in her driveway. Her dad was walking alongside, as if he didn't trust the training wheels on the slippery asphalt. My eyes began to burn again, right along with my forehead. I crossed over my bed and fell on it. Luke Skywalker taunted me with the memory of a great Christmas present from the past. Images of the girl on the bike kept running through my head. I saw wheels spin around and around as she rode it, like she was the freest girl in the world, free to travel 2, 3, maybe even 4 houses away. Free. I focused on my ceiling. It was filthy. The roof leaked, and every time it rained, the water soaked the plaster, leaving splotches and lines. Nothing in my life was perfect. Other kids had new bikes, 2 parents, and ceilings that didn't leak. It just wasn't fair. "Eddie!" Mom cried out from the hall as my bedroom door swung open. "Have you looked outside yet? Dad's gift to you is here. It's a Christmas miracle. It hasn't snowed this way since..." I'd been staring at the ceiling, unable to look at her when she came in. I knew my face would betray me. But after a couple of seconds of silence, I sat up on the bed to see what was going on. Mom was staring at the floor by my dresser.
"Is that your sweater?"
she asked quietly. I had dropped it there without even thinking. It was rolled up like a ball, like something that belonged in a trash can.
"Yeah, sorry, I should have put it away," I said meekly as I started to get up from bed. It looks like you already have," she replied.
The pain in her voice and the disappointment on her face shouldn't have surprised me. But it did. After a few moments of silence, she looked up from the sweater and directly into my eyes.
"Please, don't treat your sweater that way."
I knew that we didn't have much money. But until that moment, I never realized how heavily that weighed on my mother. In my mind, I saw my mom walking by the new bikes and Sears every day at work, knowing which one I wanted, knowing she couldn't afford it. I saw her looking at the sweaters I didn't want and she couldn't afford, picking out yarn and knitting every night while trying to convince herself that somehow I would understand and love that sweater as much as a new bike, but knowing in her heart I never could. I sat there, awkwardly, watching in silence as Mom picked up the sweater as gently as if it had been an injured kitten. She slowly folded it and neatly placed it on top of my dresser. She lingered there for a moment, her hands pressing the sweater down as if to flatten out wrinkles that didn't exist. I really didn't know how much my mother believed in the magic of Christmas until I saw it die for her in a rumpled ball on my bedroom floor. Mom gently pulled my bedroom door closed without another word. My eyes began to burn again. I went back to the window, hoping the snow would cheer me up. I pressed my head against the cold glass again. The girl across the street was gone, and so was the snow. One final flurry danced towards the ground. It looked as sad and alone as I felt. Then it started to rain. When Dad first started to get sick, Mom, along with some of our close family friends, tried to keep City Bakery going. They did the best they could, but it quickly became obvious just how good of a baker Dad really was. A recipe might seem like a simple list of ingredients and instructions, but there was obviously a lot more that went into his creations than just what was written on a bunch of old grease-stained pages. When Dad passed away, Mom quickly sold the business. I guess it was probably inevitable anyway. Our downtown, like my father, had been slowly dying for years. I don't know how much money she got, but I do know that it couldn't have been very much, because even after she got the check, I still wasn't allowed to order milk when we went out to eat. I think she used most of it to pay off Dad's medical bills. I never thought I'd miss that bakery. But the truth is, I did. I missed it a lot. I didn't miss the cleaning or the pans or the sweeping of the floor. But I missed being together. Even though we'd all been working, we'd been working together. Somehow or another, that had escaped me until it was all gone. For a long time, Mom avoided driving by the bakery after she sold it. But somebody told me that they had turned it into a shoe store. I took their word for it. It was too hard to picture someone trying on a pair of high heels in the same place that my father used to crack eggs or knead dough. Right around the time Mom sold the bakery, she also sold our car and our house. I guess she was trying to make a clean break. The Impala got traded in for our Pinto station wagon, and our house was downsized to a white one so small that our one-car garage basically doubled the size of our whole interior. I didn't like all the new stuff, but at least the Pinto didn't have the smell of Dad's Old Spice cologne trapped in the fabric of the headrests, and our new house didn't constantly smell like Dad's German chocolate cake. Thinking about all the changes that had happened so quickly in my life only added to my misery. If Dad had still been alive and still had the bakery, then we'd have enough money to buy my bike. Wasn't fair. Why was I being punished? After about an hour of watching the rain, I went back downstairs. Mom was in the kitchen. "Is there anything left for lunch?" I asked, hoping that we could pretend the sweater incident never happened. "We don't really have time now. We're going to head over to Grandma and Grandpa's house a little early. Go put on your sweater. Your grandmother helped me pick out the yarn and the pattern. She's very excited to see you in it." She spoke without any joy. Like me, she had apparently decided to pretend that the sweater incident had never happened. With the way things were going, I didn't want to go to my grandparents' farm, and I definitely did not want to wear what I was sure was an itchy, hot, uncomfortable, not a bicycle sweater. I went back upstairs, and I put on the sweater. The full-length mirror hanging on the back of the door caught my attention. I stared into my own eyes. What was I doing? I looked at myself in the sweater. I knew my mother had worked so hard on it. She was so proud of it. I wanted to like it, but I couldn't. I left my bedroom, slammed the door shut, and not too quietly stormed around the house. Remembering the lessons from my grandfather, I tried to create just enough of a ruckus to make a point, but not so much as to get into trouble. It didn't work. Mom handed me two bread bags and glared at me with eyes that I dare not try to read. It never dawned on me that Mom knew her father's tricks far better than I ever would. Chapter 6. I am only going to say this once, Edward Lee. When we get to the farm, you will be a boy having a Merry Christmas. Is that clear? Mom using my full first name? Always a bad sign. But Mom using my first name and my middle name? Oh, that was almost unprecedented. This was a code red alert. Clear, I answered curtly as I stared back out the window of our Pinto. I could never figure out why Mom would spend as much time driving to see my grandparents as we actually would spend visiting with them. The drive was an hour and a half each way, and we rarely stayed much longer than 2 hours unless we were sleeping over. Except for the sound of the heavy rain battering the roof and spraying up from the tires, the ride was spent mostly in silence. Mom stared straight ahead. She didn't even look at me in the mirror. The radio was playing Christmas songs by the Carpenters, but it felt as out of place as if it had been July. Mom reached over and rolled the front passenger window down partway, letting cold, wet air rush into the car. The Pinto's heater only had two settings, off and furnace. I didn't know if she was getting sleepy or if she was taking pity on me in my heavy wool sweater. As we drove, the houses got further and further apart, until finally I saw the first in a series of small farms that lined my grandparents' street. One of them was obviously vacant. There were big gaps in the wooden fencing, an overgrown front lawn, and an old farmhouse that just looked empty and unsteady. I thought I saw a flash of light in one of the broken windows, but nah, it must be a reflection. Who would live in a place like that? Less than a minute later, I saw my grandma's hydrangea bushes and the old plow that Grandpa had put at the end of the drive to mark his small raspberry and chicken farm. Mom turned in, and the sound of our tires crunching through the wet gravel floated in through the window. The Pinto's engine always ran for a couple of seconds every time it was shut off, and I usually made a game of getting out of the car before the rumbling stopped, but this time I waited for Mom to get out before I reluctantly followed her.
"Merry Christmas, Mary!"
"Merry Christmas, Mom," she answered. Her voice had seemed to soften a little since she had last spoken to me.
"Merry Christmas, Mr. Eddie,"
Grandpa teased. He laughed whenever he called me that. I didn't understand why until Mom set me down in front of an old rerun of a TV show with a guy who talked to his horse. But did Wilbur ever call Mr. Ed Mr. Eddie?
I don't think so.
"Hey, Grandpa," I mumbled. I was trying very hard to maintain my sour attitude, but Grandpa always made that hard.
"Look at that beautiful sweater,"
Grandma said as she took me by the shoulders. Luckily, Grandma wasn't a cheek pincher.
"Oh, and such fine knitting,"
she gave my mother a quick look of approval. "How do you like it, Eddie?" I looked over at Mom. She was watching me, expressionless, waiting to see what I was going to say. After quickly considering all the possible answers, I said,
"It's fine. You know, maybe a little scratchy, or itchy, or whatever. It's fine. I like it."
Mom's icy stare made the short walk to the front door seem like a mile. Her eyes, they were lecturing me again. My grandfather was a big man with snow-colored hair. It was more white than gray, but not like an old person's. For years, I thought he was Santa. He and Grandma were the same age, but she had beautiful brown hair with just a hint of gray in it. A miracle of modern science, Grandpa used to say. I sat on the big old comfortable sofa in front of the fire, and Grandpa sat across from me in his chair while Mom and Grandma worked in the kitchen. Grandpa didn't know it, but Mom and I called this his storytelling chair, because he couldn't seem to sit in it without offering some epic tale from the past. The problem was that Grandpa was so good at mixing fact and fiction that almost no one, including him, was really sure what was true anymore. Asking him to retell a story only made things worse. "Grandpa," I once asked, hoping he'd confirm a story that I'd remembered from years earlier, "did you really help build the lunar rover?" Oh, he loved to answer questions with a question.
"Have I ever lied to you?"
he replied, making sure that if he had told the story in fun, he wasn't going to lie now by confirming it. It was the perfect system. Even Grandma didn't know the truth anymore. When I would ask her to confirm one of Grandpa's tales, she would simply say, "Could be." She wasn't being coy or playing along. She just really didn't know anymore. "Could be" was the best. No. Make that the only answer she could legitimately give. Sometimes Grandpa would begin weaving a story together when after a few sentences, Grandma would show her disapproval by yelling his name,
"Edward!"
Grandpa would then lower his voice and gesture me to move closer to his chair. The procedure would repeat itself throughout the entire story until finally I'd be sitting at my grandfather's feet, looking up at him in awe as he was just whispering lies.
"Grandpa, you really built this whole house by yourself?"
"Yes, in fact, without a hammer and only two..."
"Edward!"
Grandma yelled from the kitchen. I never knew how she could hear from that far away. Mom used to always tell me she had eyes in the back of her head, so I just figured Grandma had ears in other rooms. Now, as my grandfather sat across from me in this chair, stroking his chin on that rainy Christmas afternoon, I hoped that he would start in on another story. I couldn't have cared less if he had made the whole thing up. I just didn't want to think about my sweater and bikes or Dad anymore. Unfortunately, he had another idea.
"So, Eddie, you ready to beat me at Chinese checkers?"
Chinese checkers? What the heck is going on? I figured that Grandpa had either taken the last dime from the people he played cards with, or he was looking to test his system out on a different game. I risk pressing the issue. Why don't you want to play cards, Grandpa?
Cards!
He looked away quickly, a telltale sign that he was about to make something up.
I haven't been able to find my deck. Besides, Chinese checkers, you know, they're more fun. You don't have to do any math.
Math? Apparently, Grandpa's system was even more complicated than I thought. But at this point, the truth was that no game sounded like very much fun. I just said, no thanks, Grandpa.
Something wrong, Eddie?
Nah, it just doesn't feel like Christmas. Maybe it's the rain.
Not Christmas, huh? Oh, we better get rid of that tree, then,
he said with a smile much warmer than I deserved. I was thinking about telling him what had happened that morning, how I'd gotten a sweater instead of a bike that I deserved. If anyone would understand my disappointment, it was Grandpa. I figured if that went well, maybe I would apologize to Mom for the way I had acted. The 90 minutes of silence in the car ride over had made the trip seem so long that the thought of enduring an equally silent ride home was almost unbearable. I was about to tell Grandpa the story when I caught sight of the Christmas tree. It was unlike me to not have already noticed it and done a thorough investigation, but there were only a few presents under it. Grandpa caught me looking. You know, Grandma doesn't put them there. I was lost in thought. I barely heard what Grandpa had said. I turned back and faced him.
What? Grandma, she for some reason thinks that you and I take sneak peeks at the presents. She won't even put them under the tree anymore. She hides them.
Why would she think that? A slight smile involuntarily took hold of my face. I wasn't as experienced at lying as Grandpa was.
I have no idea.
Grandpa's face gave away nothing. But I do know this. If pirates hid their treasure the way Grandma hides her presents, they'd all have gone bankrupt. I'm getting socks and a new tool belt. I don't know why I was surprised, but I was.
What about me? What am I getting?
Oh, I don't know, Eddie.
I do know that you have some pajamas coming.
She hasn't even wrapped them yet. I think she's just going to put them in your dresser.
Grandpa looked away.
But other than that, I couldn't find any of yours.
Say, would you mind helping me bring in some more firewood?
No, I don't mind.
It was really hard to say no to my grandfather, and it was impossible to do twice in a row. So we trudged through what was left of a sloppy, wet snow to a long stack of firewood. I actually caught myself enjoying my attempts to completely hide my footprints inside my grandfather's. It wasn't hard. His feet seemed to be about 3 times bigger than mine.
Grandpa,
I whispered,
what do you mean you couldn't find my presents?
Grandpa ignored my question as he piled sticks of wood into my cradled arms, making sure to add just one more than I could comfortably carry. Then he tucked a single piece under his arm and followed me back to the house.
There you are, Grandma said as she opened the door for me. We were beginning to think you two got lost.
Grandma knew better than anyone that Grandpa never got lost. Sure, he usually wasn't where everyone else thought he should be, but Grandpa always knew where he was, and more importantly, why he was there. Grandpa just winked at me.
What do you mean, dear? Eddie and I have just been getting some wood.
I thought maybe you two had gone to town without telling us, she said with a smile. Whenever I'd visit, Grandpa looked for any excuse to take me into town. He could turn the simplest errand into an adventure in finding the gray area between the letter and the spirit of Grandma's law. A few summers earlier, Grandma had asked him to go to the hardware store to pick up some new bags for the vacuum cleaner. I tagged along. Instead of going to the one that was about 10 minutes away, Grandpa drove us all the way to the far end of town to another hardware store. Didn't really take me long to figure out why. This particular store happened to have a soft-serve ice cream counter in the back. We got back 3 hours later. Grandma didn't even have to ask what happened. Our ice cream mustaches and the spill on his shirt gave us away. But before she could say a word, Grandpa pulled the vacuum bags out and gave her a big hug. It was really hard for anybody really to be mad at him. A smile crept across my face as I thought about that trip. Mom was standing behind Grandma now. wearing one of her gingham aprons. She saw me smile. She smiled back. As only a 12-year-old could, I stupidly put up another wall and acted as though I wasn't ready to give in yet. I look right past her. If Grandpa was the king of telling stories, then the dinner table was his court. It was always fun, but since Grandma made us wait to open our presents until after dinner, Grandpa tried to keep his stories shorter than usual on Christmas. He wanted to get to the tree just as much as I did. This year, however, Grandpa seemed to be in an exceptional hurry. Mom and I knew something was up, but neither of us could figure out what it was. Finally, about halfway through dinner, Grandma apparently had had enough of his fidgeting. She turned to him and whispered, "Tomorrow, Edward." Grandpa's face revealed his disappointment. After coffee was poured and we all filed into the family room, Grandpa sat in his storytelling chair. Mom and Grandma sat on the couch, and I went right to the tree. I was given the Santa hat, as usual. I was the designated present distributor. I got right to work. "Here you go, Grandpa," I said as I brought him a present that was suspiciously light. "Light as socks," I thought to myself. Grandpa winked at me as I put the box by his feet. Each time I went to retrieve another box from under the tree, I secretly hoped to find my name written on the tag, but it only happened twice. Even Mom had three presents. I slowly started to unwrap my first gift when I noticed that a piece of tape sealing one of the end flaps had a slight bubble in it. Grandpa. I looked up at him to give my version of the "I know what you did" look, but he ignored my glare and concentrated intently on his present. Given the size of my two presents, I knew that neither would contain a bike, but I still held out hope, just as I had before opening my sweater earlier that morning. What if Grandpa wrapped a picture of a bike? I'd never put anything past Grandpa's imagination, but I had to admit that it seemed like a stretch at this point. "Socks!" My thoughts were interrupted by Grandpa's overly excited scream from across the room. Gosh, he was good at this. While most people on television tear off the wrapping paper, crinkle it up into a ball, and then throw it into a trash bag across the room, we always had to open our packages slowly and carefully so we could reuse the paper the following year. I think my mom and my grandmother were secretly in a game to see which one of them would be the first to be unable to salvage the paper anymore. This year, each of the gifts had been wrapped in a paper that was only 2 years younger than I was. While I always hated the whole paper-saving process because it slowed down the present opening, it did help cover any mistakes that Grandpa and I might have made during our previews. If we'd accidentally torn a bit of paper or ripped a piece of tape, it could always be blamed on the mandatory recycling program. I picked up one of the boxes that had my name on it. It wasn't even wrapped. I slowly pulled the ribbon off and lifted the top and pushed the tissue paper out of the way. My heart began racing with anticipation. If anyone would wrap up a clue to a scavenger hunt that would end with a bike, it was my grandfather. My hands shook with excitement. I looked up at my grandpa. He had a wide, 12-year-old smile on his face. Good sign. I tore through the final piece of the tissue paper and finally uncovered the gift. Handmade pajamas and a pair of handmade slippers that were made of the same yarn as my sweater. Fantastic. I was fooled again. Not wanting to repeat the sweater incident, I put on the happiest expression that I could muster. "Thanks, Grandma. These are really nice, and they match my sweater perfectly." By now, I was getting pretty good at faking excitement. "They certainly should. Your mother and I split the yarn. What a deal we got." "A tool belt!" I heard Grandpa bellow from across the room. "What a surprise! It's exactly what I needed!" The day was turning out to be a disaster, and I didn't want to drag it out any longer. I reached for my last present, feeling a little like Charlie Bucket opening that one Wonka bar that my parents could afford, hoping to see a flash of gold, but knowing the odds were against me. I looked down at the tag, and my heart sank. It was from my great aunt, but great wasn't a word anyone would ever use to describe her gifts. She was as insane as she was old, and her presents were almost always something she took directly out of her house and then just wrapped up. One year, she gave me something that nobody in the family could identify. Grandpa swore it was an ashtray that he had seen in her kitchen. Mom thought it was an old homemade coffee mug. Either way, not really something I wanted. Now it sat on top of my dresser at home, holding a nickel, a homemade pet rock, and a safety pin. As I opened this year's gift, I prayed that it was something I could actually use. And I wasn't disappointed. It was a roll of pennies.
You gotta be kidding me, I thought.
Well, at least I know where I'm gonna keep 'em. The rain was now beating down loudly on the roof of the old farmhouse, and I could hear every drop echo, as if they'd all been falling in slow motion. All traces of snow and Christmas magic were now gathered in muddy brown puddles. I wished I could start the day all over again, as a completely different person.
Eddie, Grandma invited us to sleep over.
Mom interrupted my daydream.
We can have a big breakfast in the morning, and we can drive home at lunchtime tomorrow.
I felt my heart rate quicken. I always loved sleeping over at the farm. Grandpa and I would get into all kinds of trouble once Mom and Grandma were asleep. One time, he and I spent 2 hours mixing up Grandma's kitchen spices by pouring each of them into a different bottle. Cinnamon became paprika. Parsley became dill. Dill was nutmeg. Nutmeg became rosemary. The next day's French toast was disgusting, but Grandpa and I laughed through every dill-filled bite that Grandma insisted that we take. The truth is, I really did want to stay over that night. I thought Grandpa might be the only person on earth that could make me forget about the day that I had had, but the 12-year-old in me also didn't want to make it too easy on Mom after what she'd put me through. A sweater? Pajamas? A roll of pennies? It was the worst Christmas ever. I turned and gave my mother the best scowl I could muster. I said, I don't really feel well. I just want to go home. Grandpa looked at me quizzically. My mother rubbed her forehead. Eddie, I didn't sleep much last night. You know that I've been working longer shifts at the store. I'm exhausted and I don't feel like driving. She cocked her head slightly and gave me a wink that spoke volumes. Please, for me? I dug my heels in. I just really want to get home. I'm sure some of my friends got presents I'd like to play with. The look on Mom's face told me that I had hit my mark. Grandpa's eyes narrowed. I could feel the burn of his stare on the side of my face. I'm sorry, Eddie, Mom responded firmly. We're staying. I am just too tired to drive.
It would mean a lot to us to have our two favorite people here for breakfast tomorrow, my grandmother interjected, trying to restore the peace.
But then Grandpa spoke up, his tone far more serious than I was used to.
You know what? I think Eddie's right. Maybe you two should just head home. After all, Eddie doesn't feel well.
Oh, I should have known that Grandpa would be onto my game. He thought more like a 12-year-old than I did. I tried to dig my way out of the mess by thinking one step ahead of him.
Actually, Grandpa, I mean, maybe Mom is right. Maybe we should stay. I mean, don't you have some errands in town I could help you with in the morning?
I looked at Grandpa with a wry smile, waiting for him to reciprocate, but he didn't.
Nope. Nothing I can't take care of next week. I really think you guys should head home. I'm sure you want to play with all of your friends' great presents.
Checkmate. I looked down, embarrassed and angry. My mother sighed.
Well, I guess that's that.
Her eyes revealed both exhaustion and resignation.
Go upstairs and get your stuff packed up, Eddie. I need to talk to your grandma and grandpa. I'll call you when I'm ready to go.
Sure.
I pretended not to be bothered by any of this.
And put on your bread bags.
I jogged up the stairs. Punishing my mom had escalated further than I'd planned, and the look in her eyes hurt my heart. I washed over my guilt with anger. Anger at God, life, and by association, my mother. It's not my fault, I told myself. When I reached the bedroom, I took the bread bags out, but I didn't put them on. Stupid boots. I threw him to the floor. What a stinking, lousy, crummy day. I hated Christmas. I just wish it were all over. But it wasn't even close to over. I still had what was sure to be a long, painful, silent drive ahead. I took off my Christmas sweater and clutched it tightly in my arms as I lay down on the bed. What a gift, I thought sarcastically to myself. What a perfect gift. My eyes began to burn under the weight of my anger. I buried my head in the pillow, hoping that my mother wouldn't call me until my tears had dried.
Eddie!
Mother's voice rang up the stairs.
It's time to go!
I groaned with exhaustion. I reluctantly put my sweater on, then lifted my bag and walked downstairs. Grandma had her arm around my mother's waist and was giving her a reassuring squeeze.
Don't forget to call me when you get home, Mary. I don't want to be up all night worrying.
For as long as I could remember, my mother would call my grandparents as soon as we returned home from their house. Since long-distance calls were a luxury for us, they had, with Grandpa's assistance, developed a system. Mom would use the operator to make a person-to-person call and ask for herself. Grandma would answer, claim her daughter had just left, and then hang up, knowing that her daughter had made it home safely. It was a great system, and as Grandpa always stressed, it was completely free and almost honest. My grandparents went into the kitchen to box up the food we would have eaten together for breakfast. I could hear deliberately muffled conversation. The stakes had just been raised, and I was going to win this mind game, no matter what it took. Chapter 7. We were 20 minutes into our drive home before either of us spoke.
Oh, you really outdid yourself this time, Eddie.
I watched a seemingly endless number of forms fade away in the rearview mirror. The clouds marking the edge of a winter storm that had squeezed the sun into a sad, pale yellow circle with a gray halo.
What do you want me to do? Mom asked, trying to hide her tears. I want to have a real life, the words exploded from my mouth. Like my friends!
I couldn't help it. A whole day of pent-up frustration and anger poured out.
A real life? Eddie, this is the reality of my life. I work 4 different jobs. I feel like I haven't slept in 2 years. I switch hours with people so I can be home with you as much as possible, but I can only do so much, Eddie. I'm tired. I am just so tired. And you know what else? Maybe it's time you start being the man you need to grow into rather than acting like the 8-year-old kid you were.
I had never heard my mother talk to me like that before. I looked up just in time to see her discreetly wipe a tear from her eye. When she spoke again, her tone was much softer. I know that things have been hard since Dad died, but it's been hard for both of us. At some point, you have to realize that everything happens for a reason. It's up to you to find that reason, to learn from it. Let it take you to the place you're supposed to be, not just where you've ended up. Mom spoke slowly. You can either complain about how hard your life is, or you can realize that only you are responsible for it. You get to choose. Am I going to be happy, or am I going to be miserable? And nothing, nothing, Edward, not a sweater, and certainly not a bike will change that. Something deep inside of me wanted to apologize, beg for my mother's forgiveness. Instead, I just sat there. The day's steady rain had slowed to a drizzle, but the mist kicked up over the tires and made it hard to see anything out of the side window. Looking straight ahead was out of the question. Mom's eyes might be waiting in the mirror for another lecture, so I rolled my window down halfway and prayed that we would get home fast. After a few minutes, Grandma's church came into view through the mist. I say Grandma's church because she was, by far, the most religious person in the family. Mom was in second place, but there weren't really any contenders after that. Grandpa and I, we were tied for last. When I was a little kid, I used to get dressed up and go to church with Mom every Sunday. Oh, I hated it. She made me sit up straight and listen for the whole hour. Dad never came with us. He usually just stayed home or went golfing instead. He used to say he was a big believer in all of the Ten Commandments, especially the one that mandated rest on the Sabbath. Mom often reminded him that golf was probably not what the Lord had in mind, but Dad would just laugh and say, God doesn't take attendance on Sunday. A part of me thought he was just saying that to make himself feel better about not going with us, but when I saw the way Dad treated others and cared for those in need, I understood what he really meant. God takes attendance every day. During the summer, when I'd stay over at my grandparents' house a lot, we'd go over to Grandma's church every Sunday. It was the only time that I ever actually looked forward to going because Grandpa and I used to make up games to pass the time. We came up with a whole bunch of them just over the years, but my favorite game was the one we called Stand for God. Grandpa actually tried to call it Jump for Jesus, but even he knew that was over the line, so he settled on the safer name. The rules were simple. Each time the service called for the congregation to sit, stand, kneel, or sing, you had to be the first one. Now, it probably sounds easy, but to win, you had to guess really early. And if you guessed wrong, you not only lost, but you also looked like a big fat idiot. And you'd get a full dose of Grandma's evil eye. Now that I think back, it's actually pretty obvious where Mom learned her uncanny ability to lecture with her eyes. The more we played Stand for God, the better Grandpa and I got at it, and the earlier you had to guess if you wanted to win. One time, Grandpa started singing On Eagle's Wings so early that Father Sullivan actually stopped reading the scripture and glared at him from the pulpit. Not coincidentally, that was also the last time that Grandpa and I ever got to sit next to each other in church. After Grandma started sitting between us, the masses just seemed to go on forever, but over time, something strange began to happen. I actually began to enjoy them. I think part of it was that I felt closest to Dad when I was there. It's hard to describe, but there were times that I'd feel him sitting right next to me. Sometimes I even heard his horrible voice singing right along with mine. As I looked out the back windshield, Grandma's church, the place where I felt most connected to my father, was now just a dot in the fog. I thought how strange it was that a person sitting just 2 feet away from me felt more distant than someone who wasn't even alive. With the church now beyond the horizon, I turned back around and risked a quick glance up front. Mom's eyes were waiting for me in the mirror, but they weren't angry or hurt anymore. They were just tired. I knew that she was giving me an opening to apologize, and all would be forgiven and all would be forgotten. But I wasn't ready. I was tired, too. About 10 minutes later, I fell asleep. So did Mom. I woke to the ticking sound the Ford's engine made while it cooled.